This episode of Random Trek is brought to you by Mack Weldon, purveyors of more than just underwear. That's right, folks, they make socks, t-shirts, hoodies, and more. The key here, though, is that they are really, really comfortable, and their website, which is mackweldon.com, is easy to use. Shopping is a breeze, and if you're going to be shopping at mackweldon.com, which I suggest you should, you get 20% off if you use the promo code TREK. It's the holiday season. You need to give gifts. I know what you're thinking. Socks and underwear are lame gifts, but that's because you've never given Mack Weldon socks or underwear. So head over to mackweldon.com, use promo code TREK, T-R-E-K, and you'll get 20% off your order. And now, enjoy this episode of Random Trek. Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast where I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest tonight is Warren Frey. Warren, thank you so much for joining me.
Hello.
How are you?
I am pretty good.
Excellent. Why don't you tell the people a little bit about yourself?
Okay, well, I'm probably best known for being one of the three who rule, in air quotes, from Radio Free Scaro, the Doctor Who podcast. But what is less known, although I think we do digress every now and again, is that I am a fan of some of the Star Trek. Not all, but some of the Star Trek.
I'm intrigued by this statement. So how much of a fan would you say you are of Star Trek?
And then I'll ask. I would say I'm a huge fan of the original series of the original series movies, more or less, give or take a few of the clunkers. I would say Wrath of Khan, Undiscovered Country, and First Contact are my three go-tos for that.
You don't enjoy Voyage Home?
I like Voyage Home, but it's you can't eat dessert all the time.
That's true. It is a very sugary movie.
Yeah, it's probably number four out of those four, but it's nothing you can go to all the time, which is kind of a contradictory statement since it's the one that made the most money of all of them and is clearly remembered by everybody as the most popular and best.
That's true.
Although Wrath of Khan is quite unquestionably the best.
So that order, is that the order of your preference? Wrath of Khan, Undiscovered Country, and First Contact?
Yes, I would say so.
Interesting.
I don't know where I'd throw the new original Star Trek, but I definitely know where I'm throwing Into Darkness, which is below Galaxy Quest like everybody else. Galaxy Quest actually is probably number five, because that is one of the best Star Trek films ever made that's not actually Star Trek.
That is true. Galaxy Quest is great. And I think I would, if I were listing the movies, and which I'm going to do right now, because why bring up this if I didn't do it? I would do Wrath of Khan, because I think Wrath of Khan is one of my favorite movies, period.
Oh, yeah. It's a fantastic film,
exactly.
Let alone the fact it's got Star Trek in it.
Exactly. It's not just my favorite Star Trek movie. It is one of my favorite movies. And then I think I would put First Contact second, because I really love First Contact.
It is great. Don't get me wrong.
And then I think I might put Voyage Home because it has whales.
True. There's a couple I think get unfairly maligned. I think Star Trek 3 isn't anywhere near as bad as people make it out to be. It's just kind of a fun adventure.
I totally agree. I think the Star Trek 3 suffers from the fact that to really appreciate it, you have to watch it in order you have to watch 2 and then 3 and then 4 immediately.
Exactly.
Otherwise,
and the other one is
work.
I'm actually reading Michael Piller's unpublished book about writing Insurrection, and I understand all the problems with it, but I never really hated Insurrection. It's not, I'll admit it's okay, it's probably not, if you put a movie in a lab and say is it good or not, it probably not, but it's still kind of fun. Nemesis is not, and Generations is kind of a real disappointment, and Star Trek 1, it means well, and it has parts. I mean, the score is great, and Persis Kambada is stunningly gorgeous, McCoy's finest hours in that film, where he shows up in a giant beard and a medallion, looking like he's coming off a high from Studio 54. I'm like, oh my god, McCoy has reached peak McCoy right here.
Last winter, there was a group here in Philadelphia that put on a Star Trek film festival, and they did every night they did the movies, the original movies, in theater. So I bought a ticket to see a few of them. I couldn't see all of them, sadly, because I had other things to do.
Well, I've seen 5 in the theater, and you're not missing out.
I did not see 5. I saw the first one and Wrath of Khan. Sadly, Wrath of Khan, the print was in bad condition.
Oh, that sucks.
But it was fun to watch. Voyage, the motion picture, I forgot just how long that movie is.
Like, I dragged my dad to it when it came out in, what is that, 79? So I must have been 8 years old, and my poor dad had to sit through all the... And he's not a Star Trek fan, so he's just like, oh my God, when is this going to end? And I'm 8, and I'm like, oh my God, when is this going to end?
Yeah, I feel like that movie could have done with a little editing, maybe.
Yes, yes. Although, I remember reading it somewhere at the time that the reason they did that was because this is the first time any Star Trek fans had seen effects that looked this good.
Mm.
And they still, a lot of them hold up, I mean, to be fair. So even though apparently there's a whole this behind-the-scenes shenanigans going on where the effects were delivered, they didn't work, and so they had to rush them. But given all that, they don't actually look too bad for a 40-year-old movie.
Yeah, I was discussing this with Joel Mathis, I think, in the episode previous of this, to how well the effects in Star Trek in general, as well, especially for the ships, hold up.
Especially TOS. Like, yes. I don't understand why they redid them. I'm like, they look fine for what they are. Like, yeah, they just go one way across. Who cares? That's all you need. It's like showing. It's like showing the house and the facts of life. It's an establishing shot. Who cares? It's not important.
That is right. Star Trek is just like the facts of life.
Exactly, in so many ways.
You've cracked this puzzle. I think I can shut down the podcast.
Eternal mystery solved.
Now, you are a fan of Doctor Who.
Yep, that's putting it mildly.
And so my fandom of Doctor Who, or interest in Doctor Who, really started, as with, I think, a lot of people nowadays, with the reboot, Christopher Eccleston thing, which I think is fair to say, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm no Doctor Who expert, is a little more fast-paced than classic Who.
And better looking, and you know, a whole lot. But to be fair, when they brought it back, they brought it back in such a way that it kind of seems to fit, and it is the same show, just glossier. Like, it doesn't feel like they completely rebooted it. It feels like a continuation of what came before, even though it's radically different in a lot of ways. And Doctor Who is responsible for me kind of drifting off from Star Trek, because when I was a kid, The story of me liking Star Trek is when I was a kid, it was on when I had to go to bed at like 6 years old or whatever, on the local CBS, or not local, local in Spokane, because I'm in Canada, CBS affiliate. And so for a year, I had to sit there and go, what is this intriguing show with the colorful buttons and all the rest of it? And then I got, you know, you get ranked up, leveled up in your bedtime.
That's right.
So I finally got to watch it. And so I just marathoned it, if that's even a term in the 70s, like by watching one a day in syndication.
It's a slow binge. That's what
it
was. Yes,
it is a very slow binge. And then when I turned 12, I saw Doctor Who and it was game over. Although I did watch Next Generation and quite liked it, and watched about half of DS9, and then once Voyager came around, I just kind of gave up.
Oh, well, I've heard that before.
But I recently actually said, you know what, maybe I missed something good. So I went onto a top 10 list that said, here's the top 10 Voyagers, and what, most of them involved the cranky Doctor, who's the only guy I liked anyway. Mm-hmm. And those weren't bad, I have to say. Those were all right. And the one where they go back into the past with Sarah Silverman and what's his name? Tuvok, dressed up like a 90s Compton gang guy. It's just great.
Oh, Tuvok. I'm sure he loved that.
Yeah, sure he was thrilled. His fluorescent sweats and all the rest of it.
Now, I bring up Doctor Who not because, A, I know you're a big Doctor Who fan, obviously. And as you said, that's understating it. But Doctor Who, classic Doctor Who, I feel like is about 70% walking in corridors.
That's about right, yeah.
And so that the Star Trek motion picture is about 80% panning shots of the Enterprise.
And staring at lights.
So I feel like there's something there, some kind of affinity between the two properties.
Somewhat, yeah. Although there's always been a constant battle between the two fandoms, too. And I think Doctor Who has, finally, the upper hand on that one. Because it used to be Star Trek, you'd go to any sci-fi convention of any stripe, and somebody would be in a Star Trek uniform. And you still get that, but it just seems like it's kind of not the force it used to be in terms of fans getting into it. And I think part of that is because we've only got a movie once every 3 or 4 years.
Exactly. There's no TV show currently
Yet. But I bet you when it comes back, we'll see that come back again. But now, right now, Doctor Who is in the lead, but you know, that will last forever. Because if Doctor Who fans are anything, we're pessimistic as hell. So unlike Star Trek fans, and unlike the Stockholm Syndrome Star Wars fans, who refuse to believe that anything could possibly be wrong with their series, despite 3 films of evidence to the contrary.
Well, you know, the true Star Wars fans reject those films' existence.
Of course they do. What films, they say.
Exactly. We do not speak of such things. True. And I feel like Doctor Who has a slight advantage over Star Trek in the cosplay universe, especially if you're dressing as the Doctor, because he kind of wears, well,
it's
some
easier
of the
and there's own. More of it.
Exactly. You could pick your Doctor. Some of the Doctors just wear normal stuff, so if you want to throw together a cosplay outfit, it's kind of easy. Get a scarf, and you're done.
Star Trek, you're either stuck with the uniform or you're that rock guy from the Abraham Lincoln episode, which would be an awesome cosplay, I gotta say.
Harder to make, though. Or a rock guy from Star Trek V, if you're really hard.
Oh, even better. What does God need with the starship?
You know, he gets bored. Yeah. So, Deep Space Nine. Let's talk about Deep Space Nine. You got a Deep Space Nine episode.
Yes, I did.
Specifically, Playing God, which is a Season 2, Episode 17. And this is a Dax episode where we continue to explore the fact that she's a Trill and she has a symbiote and what all of that entails. And I think this is the first time, although I could be wrong, where we get a glimpse into how selective the process for getting a symbiote is. Mm-hmm. And we can really appreciate how hard Dax had to work to get to where she was.
And there's even implications of abuse and, well, not even abuse, but just, she makes it sound like it wasn't a pleasant experience anyway.
She makes it sound like it was a horrible experience.
Yeah.
And apparently her previous host had a reputation for drumming people out during their little field test of the symbiote program.
Now, how does this all work? Because while I was watching, I'm like, she's not going to take him on as a host, so is he just kind of like being field tested for proper hostiness before they put a Trill in him? Like, how does this work?
Well, so they are Trills.
Yeah.
And they have a symbiote. Not all Trills have a symbiote. They have, I don't know where the symbiotes, apparently they kind of grew up on the same planet, or evolved, not grew up, on the same planet with the Trills as a symbiotic relationship. So there's a limited number of symbiotes that will then be placed into qualified hosts. Mm-hmm. So Arjun, who is the young Trill initiative that comes to visit Dax, is hoping that he will get one of the symbiote slots that is open, and so that it could be implanted.
Hoping is the optimal word for it. Yeah.
Yes, he kind of has a rocky road ahead of him, it seems.
Well, he comes off as a complete wet blanket. Like, he shows up and I'm like, I would fire this guy instantly. Like, you're out, buddy.
Yeah, he doesn't have a great demeanor.
No.
And he doesn't seem like he's super into doing the whole symbiote thing.
He's like a millennial. Well, okay, that's not fair to millennials. He's like the media's idea of a millennial 20 years early.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically Gen X, because they lumped us in that boat too. So
that's true. He's disaffected. He's kind of wishy-washy. I wouldn't call him smarmy, because he's kind of squeaky clean and yet super annoying at the same time.
Yeah. Or squeaky clean and super annoying.
Exactly. And he is expecting Dax to be like her previous host, Kirzon Dax, who apparently was, a stickler for getting the right person for the symbiote program. And when he meets Dax herself, or Jadzia Dax, he's surprised, to say the least, at what he finds. The Doctor, we first see him, Julian Bashir, and he arrive in the same shuttle. And Julian has been telling her a little bit about Jadzia.
Is it Julian or is it Cole Meany? No, you're right. It is Julian Bashir. You're right.
Yes, Cole Meany spends most of the episode looking for Cardassian voles.
Yeah, that was one of my problems with this. I was like, this is your B plot, is it? Well, okay, looking for voles.
Yes.
I guess.
It's a thing. that we can get to that. Though that's kind of a Doctor Who level special effect, the vole, I felt like.
That's true. Yeah, I can hardly criticize on that score.
A plastic, obviously fake-looking puppet.
The same one each time, too.
Yes, I did notice that you never see more than one vole in one shot, because they only had the one, and they had to be careful with it. So the A-plot is Dax and Arjun kind of having this mentor / teacher / antagonistic relationship, where she's basically saying, you gotta lighten up, kid. And he's like, you're nothing like what I thought. And the B plot is oh no, there's an infestation in Deep Space Nine of these voles.
Which eventually turns into, we found this thing in space.
Yes. And that's the title comes from playing God, because they are, we're jumping all over, but I think it's okay. They go through the wormhole, and they hit some turbulence, and it turns out, oh no, there's a proto-universe trapped in their warp nacelle.
as often happens.
You know, it happens all the time. They don't know it's a proto-universe. They beam it into a lab and put it behind a containment field and do some science-y stuff. And Dax figures out that she recognizes the pattern of growth that it is exhibiting, and it's the growth of a universe, and oh no, it's going to take over not only Deep Space Nine, but one imagines it will expand and replace our current universe eventually.
And at first Kira's like, ah, just stomp on it, who cares, genocide, big deal.
Kira does not take much time to think, well, it's either them or us, we're in charge, let's get rid of these guys.
Yep.
Everybody else is a bit horrified at this.
I gotta say, my favorite part of the whole episode is probably the least Gene Roddenberry part, where Quark says, yeah, I screwed up. I run a bar now. Ah, I gotta go.
I did love that part. So, that's yeah, there's
legit the attitude, actually, Gene Roddenberry or not.
It's true. So we should talk a little bit about Jadzia and Arjun's kind of relationship. So Arjun is expecting, I think, someone who is kind of a stick in the mud, a stickler for the rules, and he is constantly realizing that that's not what Jadzia Dax is. So when he first sees her, she's playing a card game with some Ferengi, and she's having a grand old time, drinking stuff and carousing with the Ferengi, and she tries to deal him in, but he's like, oh no, I'm so tired, I don't really gamble. And she's like, all right, let's take you back to your quarters. And then the next morning, which is kind of an unfortunate scene, he rings her bell, and the door is opened to some strange alien man who is dressed
in... Very strapping fellow.
He is a strapping fellow, and he's dressed in one of Star Trek's favorite tropes, future active wear.
Along with those, you know, those foil things women get in their hair to I don't have hair, for one thing, and I'm don't get it styled for another. So I don't know what those foil things are, but you know those foil things that when you get your hair, I think, dyed?
Maybe highlighted, maybe? I think it's...
I guess. I'm completely...
Correct us. Send us your corrections.
Somebody who knows the hell they're talking about, male or female, explain it to me.
Yes. And so it is clear that he assumes, because he hears that Jadzia is in the shower, I guess, he assumes that he has caught a suitor, a male suitor, leaving Jadzia's quarters after a night of fun.
That's what I assumed.
That is what I what it was clearly we were supposed to assume.
It's kind of like Kirk putting the boots on and whatever one that is. I think the mirror maybe.
Exactly. That guy leaves. Jadzia. Oh, I think Jadzia says, "Oh boy, you really gave me a workout. I'm super sore," or something like that. You know.
Wow, subtle 90s Star Trek. Subtle.
Exactly.
I mean, not quite as subtle as when in Enterprise, when I don't even remember their names, the Vulcan and the Jock decide they have to rub gel all over each other. And I was like, I actually think I said, you got to be kidding me. Really?
Yeah.
Really, Star Trek? This is where we are now.
Well, I have mentioned that specific moment as the point at which I knew Enterprise was just pandering to me.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And it
just
turned
like when
me
The Rock
off.
Showed up. I got nothing against The Rock. He's a charming fellow. But that was some serious pandering. That's when you knew that you were like, okay, guys, come on. Come on now.
Mm-hmm. Respect us just a little bit.
Yeah.
I have no problem with attractive people rubbing gel all over each other, but it doesn't really belong on Star Trek, I don't think.
It's a little silly.
It is a little silly, especially since it's, what, decontamination gel? Come on.
Or whatever. Does it really matter?
No, not really. But it turns out...
Titillation gel, they should have called it.
That is more accurate. But there's no titillation gel here needed between Jadzia and this dude. Because he was just there teaching her some kind of... I don't know, even know, like space jazzercise or something.
Of course he was.
And so Arjun was abashed because he assumed that Jadzia was having sex with this guy. Although, what business is it of Arjun anyway? If Jadzia wants to have sex with this guy, she can have sex with whoever she wants.
It's 24th century. She can do whatever the hell she wants.
Exactly. She's lived, the symbiote has lived several lives. She can...
God only knows what she's capable of.
Exactly.
Anyway, we won't go into that dark corner.
No, we will not. And then she asks for a Ferengi drink, and Arjun doesn't like the fact that she drinks Ferengi drinks for some reason. Arjun is kind of a jerk.
Mm. Yeah, he basically is. He's just a pain in the ass, frankly.
He is. I love Jadzia.
And he doesn't get a hell of a lot better as time goes on.
No, he does not. And Jadzia, fair warning to everyone to share my bias here, but Jadzia is one of my favorite characters on Deep Space Nine. So someone who doesn't like her, I don't like them, because she's a super cool man.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I say. And so they have a bunch of these interludes where Jadzia is trying to show Arjun they go to a Klingon restaurant, and Arjun doesn't like the food because there is a funny moment where she's like, "You're just moving your food around to make it look like you ate some." And he said, "I didn't have to move it. It moved itself."
Oh, and that's another thing that kind of bugged me about this. Why is there a Klingon serenading people? That just doesn't seem right to me. It doesn't seem like the kind of thing a Klingon would do unless he had been exiled, let's say.
Well, Klingons do love opera.
That's true, but you'd think it would be less French.
Yeah, it is. It was kind
He's
of a
got
weird
an accordion.
He does. Well, he has a Klingon accordion. One assumes that it's also a deadly weapon.
Yeah, there's like a spike in it somewhere.
Exactly, and he's in intense pain while he's using it.
Of course.
Meanwhile, O'Brien is looking for Cardassian voles.
which are to do so. Bang up job, O'Brien.
Exactly, but there's an important plot point with these voles, because they're eating through wires.
Oh, so yes, of course. I do like how the one Cardassian goes, "Hey, you bought the station." Takes off.
Yes, and he says, "Oh, by the way, their mating season starts in 6 weeks." And they do a neat thing with the writers. So kudos to the writers of this episode, because I thought as soon as these voles showed up, I was like, they never encountered these voles before. You would think that they would be a problem. But O'Brien just says in like an offhand comment, "They just started spreading throughout the station when we started moving into an unused portion of the station." And I was like,
brilliant.
Okay, writer, you covered yourself there. Well done. Kudos to you, sir. Kudos. We also find out another tidbit about Arjun in that, we find out, A, he really didn't want, he wasn't the one that was supposed to go into the symbiote, the initiative program. His sister was, but she died, and his father, on his dying bed, said, "I wish only that you will become an initiate and host a symbiote like I always wanted your sister to do. You're my greatest disappointment." And then he dies.
Thanks, Dad. Gotta go.
Yep, and so Arjun is not really super keen on this whole thing, but he is super keen on piloting ships. He's a level 5 pilot.
Indeed. He can bullseye womp rats in his T-16.
That's right.
Home.
And Jadzia is impressed because she is only a lowly level 3 pilot. Mm-hmm. So he's got two whole levels on her.
She's lazy. She's had 200 years to figure this out.
It's true. You'd think she'd be like a level 15 pilot. I don't know.
Also, even though he's a level 5 pilot, he's got guest star button pressing. Because I was watching it, I'm like, she seems to know what she's doing. He looks like, I don't buy it. He's like doing sort of this pullback on, like it's an equalizer lever. And I'm like, would that work on a stationary button? Like, it's ridiculous. I'm criticizing some guy the way he's touching plexiglass. But
I'm
having
right
said
with
that.
And so the turn in this episode happens when there's an argument about destroying the proto-universe or not, and then the voles eat through a cable that I guess is very important to the containment field that was making sure that the proto-universe wouldn't expand and destroy Deep Space Nine, and now that shield is down and they can't fix it because I guess they don't have replacement cables.
Oh, damn it, we're all out. Expensive monster cables of gold tips. We can only use these.
And it's too bad we don't have a machine that can transform energy into physical matter.
Man, I'm hungry, though. I'd like a tea. Earl Grey hot, maybe? I don't know.
Exactly. So best not to think about that point. And so now the station's in peril. And Jadzia and Arjun are kind of examining the proto-universe and trying to figure out what to do. And this is when Jadzia has a heart-to-heart with Arjun. And she's like, "Listen, I don't think you really should be a host. I don't think you're up to it. I think you're annoying and whiny, and you're doing this for all the wrong reasons, and you're not, you're going to wash up, kid, so why don't you just drop out now and save yourself a lot of trouble?
I got nothing else, man.
Exactly. I don't know what else to do.
I'm trying to think of the Officer and the Gentleman quote, but I might have gotten it wrong. Keeping it current, by the way.
Oh, yes. Ripped from the pop culture headlines.
Exactly.
And so he goes off to do what you would do in that situation, which is visit Quark's and hope that the barkeep can help you with your problems.
That's what I would have done from the start. I wouldn't even bother reporting for duty. It's like, well, on Deep Space Nine, time to get hammered.
That's right. And so he does that. He drinks some blue liquid and is clearly intoxicated, and looks to Quark for some advice, which is never really a good idea.
Or is it? He is kind of the voice of common sense in this, even though, you know, not by Trek rules.
It's true. And this is the scene you were talking about, your favorite scene that is very non-Roddenberry, and I agree. Because basically, you know, he's like, oh, I'm not going to be a host. I spent all my time trying to do this, and now it's ruined. And Quark is like, what, you mean the worm? You can't have one of those worms installed on you? Eh, big deal.
Who cares?
Who cares? It's fine. And then Quark launches into this story that you think, of course, is going to be about how failure only makes you stronger and sets you up for greater success, and how he was, you know, a sub-Negus's assistant, and he slept with his daughter, and, you know, bad things happened. And then Arjun's like, ah, but you overcame adversity and got to great success, right? And Quark was like, no, I'm here on this crappy bar watching everybody else fly by at warp speed getting rich. I have failed. And then he gives the old, you only get one shot, kid, and you blew it.
Gotta go.
That's right. See you later. And Arjun is very sad.
Ah, poor Arjun.
Yes. And clearly intoxicated, which makes the next part troubling because Jadzia shows up and she's like, hey, Arjun, I need you to fly this shuttle for me.
He's down to a level 4 now.
That's right. And he's
I'm sure that's
drunk.
How driving drunk works.
I think it is. There's no breathalyzers in Star Trek, so we're
that's
not sure
convenient.
What his blood alcohol level is. But one will assume that he is A, either drinking synthahol, although I doubt he was, or B, they have some kind of hypospray thing that can sober you up.
Yeah, I've always assumed that they had something like that.
Because otherwise, it is reckless what they do.
I remember reading in a couple of the books. There's one book in particular, which for whatever reason I remember now, called Dreams of the Raven, which is a McCoy one. And McCoy is my fave because he's such a cranky jerk. And in that, he has a sonic shower, which actually makes a hell of a lot of sense when you think about it. Just walk in there, voop, done. And I think they make reference to something like, not a hypnospray, but some hangover cure thing, like just instant sobriety.
It makes sense. I mean, they have a lot of technology, so why not solve the hangover problem?
That's one of mankind's biggest problems here. Come on.
It's true. So I'm noticing a trend. You like cranky doctors. You like McCoy. You like
really
the doctor
do.
From Voyager. Sadly, Julian Bashir, who is the doctor on Deep Space Nine, is not cranky, nor is he interesting.
True. Although he didn't marry What's-Her-Name, so he's interesting. And he's pretty good in Game of Thrones. So.
Oh, that's true. The actor, you know, I'm not faulting the actor. I'm faulting the character.
Ah, true. Fair enough.
And so, long story short, they get into the shuttlecraft. They beam the proto-universe onto it. And now it becomes a very slow video game in which
yes.
Arjun needs to pilot through the wormhole without hitting these, what are they, Verdion nodes or something?
Something like that. I mean, but to be fair, when's this out? 93? It's
yep.
about the caliber of video games at the time.
It's true. And it is interesting, 94, because someone's going to correct us, so I'll just correct us now.
Now, Star Trek fans, pedantic? I can't believe, not the Doctor Who fans are any better, but...
It's part of why we love each other so much. My problem with this, I understand it puts tension and they have to, you know, manually pilot it, and he's a level 5 pilot and he's basically been incompetent in everything up to this point. So this is his moment of redemption. He can save Jadzia and the wormhole, one imagines. And he does, spoiler alert.
Why do you have to ruin it, man?
But my problem is that they never, like, these nodes never show up ever again while flying through the wormhole. No one ever has to worry about them. And they are, like, gigantic when you're
ridiculous.
Flying through. So I couldn't tell if they are gigantic, but you can just fly through them because they are Verdion fields, whatever those are, normally, and it doesn't matter because you're not usually toting along a proto-universe with a failed shield.
I was going to say there's a hell of a lot of technobabble, but no, there's just about the same amount as usual technobabble.
It's a standard level, level 2 technobabble, I think. Or if it, you know, they just wanted to have these basically space mines that they have to go through to make it exciting. And that's what I assume it is. Although I did find, so he gets through, and you tell me if you agree or not, they get through the thing, they get to the Delta Quadrant, they beam the proto-universe off and wherever they found it from, which I found not a very satisfying conclusion.
No.
Because I just assume now that it is out there in space slowly growing and will soon consume our universe.
Well, but how many of those things are actually doing that at any given time in Star Trek or any of these other things?
It's like, true.
They just kind of let them... It's like I actually applaud Star Trek for showing Picard attacked by the Borg and made it to Locutus. And then the next week, you actually see him with his family. There's actual consequences, unlike when he gets tortured by the Cardassians. Mm. And you're like, next week he's like, doo-doo-doo, drinking tea. And I'm like, but you were tortured by the Cardassians. Like, would this have some sort of effect?
That was a week ago. I'm fine.
Yeah, everything worked out great.
Well, that's just because Deanna Troi is a heck of a counselor. And she made it smooth transition for him from that, so he didn't have to worry about it.
Well, that's reassuring.
I'm trying to think of anything else. So Sisko doesn't really do much in this episode.
No, he's pre-Mohawk, or not Mohawk, pre-bald and goatee Sisko.
Yes.
That's Sisko.
That's right. You can tell generally how good a Deep Space Nine episode is by if Sisko has hair or if he has facial hair.
Much like Riker in the beard.
Yes, it's true. Facial hair is a mark of a good Star Trek episode.
So that's why Voyager was no good?
I'm trying to think. Does anybody...
Or
nobody...
Enterprise, for that matter. What's his name? Didn't have a beard or a mustache? Yeah,
that's true.
If he had a big porn... If Scott... What's his name?
Bakula.
Bakula. Thank you. Yes, Bakula. Yeah. Quantum Leap guy. Had a giant porn stash, that show would have been much better.
Oh, and this goes... So the motion picture, McCoy had a giant beard.
Yeah, see? It started with a beard anyway.
It's all clicking.
And Khan had a giant mane of hair. He didn't have a beard, but he had a giant mane of hair.
That's
which
true.
He could have wrapped around his face as a beard.
He could have. It's true. I am intrigued. And nobody on Voyager does have facial hair, I don't think. So
no. I mean, the one guy's got the tattoos on his face. That's as close as you get.
Oh, that's true. Chakotay does have some facial decoration. But yeah, Sisko doesn't really do much except he decides not to destroy the proto-universe because I think we can all agree that's probably the right thing to do.
Reasonable.
Figure out how to get rid of it. And he does have a weird scene with his son where his son is in love with a Dabo girl.
That was just odd.
But nothing really happens with that.
Now, and you never really get the feeling whether or not the Dabo girl is like... You kind of get the feeling that the Dabo girl is socially lower down the food chain... But then she isn't, and she might be 30, and she might be 50.
Right.
I heard Dabo girl, and I assume she's like, you know, a barmaid.
Well, that's what I was
miming. And far too old for teenage. I'm like, this is really kind of inappropriate if she is who I think she is. Like, I thought it was Chase Masterson, basically.
Yes, that's what I assumed as well. So I didn't really understand. Although Sisko seemed like, oh, we'll invite her over for dinner so I can meet her. Because, you know, life is short, kid.
Yeah.
I get back to your entomology studies, because apparently that's how he met her. He was tutoring her in entomology, which is just strange. But
I don't get most of it.
No, I didn't understand that little part. I think they just needed to fill some time. And they were like, Jake's not in this, so let's give him something to do.
Yeah. We got 5 minutes, guys. Come on, come up with something.
Please. Yeah, somebody.
I beg of you.
And we only have the one vol, so we can't have any more vol scenes. What's his name? Odo, very briefly in here. Where he has a very effective scene, though, because Kira is when she's arguing to destroy the proto-universe, and Odo says, she's like, come on, it's like stepping on ants, and Odo is very adamant. He's like, I don't step on ants.
He's very humanistic, which is interesting from Odo, because he seems like a hard ass.
Yes, well, I think part of it is he is an alien life form, and he was treated very poorly when he was found, so he doesn't feel like it's right to destroy this kind of alien universe just because we don't understand it, and it's inconvenient for us.
I remember one where I think it was the tailor, who's actually not a tailor.
Garak.
Garak, yes. is torturing him, so he's not putting him back in his bucket. Mm-hmm. And so he's just kind of coming apart. And I think I tweeted, "Marge, I feel as dirty as a Frenchman" with that picture.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh, making fun of the French. Appropriate, given current events.
It's true. Once again, ripped from the headlines.
That one actually is terribly inappropriately ripped. I'm sorry, I take it all
true.
Back.
We may edit this part
out. Yeah, you might want to cut this part out.
And that's basically the episode, right? At the end, Arjun apologizes. I skipped over the part where Arjun basically melts down after Jadzia tells him, you know, you're not cut out for this. And Arjun does the old thing, well, yeah, you're not so great yourself.
Yeah.
Which once happened to me when I was, gave my resignation for a job. And my supervisor was like, well, why are you resigning? And I was just like, well, you know, I'm not the right fit. I don't feel like it's working out. And she was like, well, no, really, tell me. That's just the pat answer. Tell me why. And I was like, well, you know, no, just not the right fit. And she was like, no, really, tell me why. And so I listed many reasons why.
Oops.
Yeah. And then she was like, well, you're not so great yourself, and listed many reasons why I wasn't so great.
Oh, there's no winning in this situation.
No. And I was like, I think this sums up why I'm quitting.
Gotta go.
See you later. And so, yeah, Arjun does that thing where he's like, you are like the worst symbiote. I don't know how you became a host. You sully the entire program with your wild behavior. And I don't even want a host if this is what I'm going to – I don't want a symbiote if this is what's going to turn out to be my life. Although when you look at Jadzia's life, she has a pretty good life. She's doing jazzercise and hanging out with Ferengi and having a gay old time. So Arjun is just –
he's just lame is what he is.
He is pretty lame. But at the end,
he seems like he is somebody's son, as they say in the show, but he just seems like a guy who gets brought on because it's like, this is my, you know, my brother's kid. Can you just take care of him for a little while?
just show him the ropes. Yeah,
come on.
He'll stay out of the way. It's a favor. But at the end, it's not like one of these like a lame endings where Jazzy is like, well, now you've truly proven yourself. I underestimated you, Arjun. You're a good guy. She says, given time, I think anyone could be a host, and you are in the set of anyone, so you have a chance, Arjun.
Here is your participation badge.
That's right. So don't give up if that's what you really want to do. But be sure that you really want to do it. And then the episode ends.
Oh, so sad.
And I always do this. Is before people email me, yes, I know it is the Gamma Quadrant, and I said the Delta Quadrant.
Oh,
the Delta
my
Quadrant
God.
Is where How Voyager is. I can never keep them straight, and I apologize.
Yeah, neither can I.
They're different quadrants of imaginary space, and I just can't keep them straight. So, Warren, what did you think of this episode overall?
While I was watching it, I was thinking to myself, you know, in the 90s when you didn't have Netflix or DVD mm-hmm. box sets or really anything besides collections of videotapes, this is when I'd watch and go, yeah, it was okay because it was on that week.
Right.
And I would, now that it's all of Deep Space Nine is on Netflix, which is where I watched it, I'm like, there are better. This is okay, but if I wasn't watching it to be a completionist, I probably wouldn't bother. But it's not terrible. You know, it's it's serviceable, as I think the best way to put it.
Yes, this is one of those middling episodes.
Yeah, it's one of those ones where you're like, yeah, okay, this is – you could tell on the schedule. You know, if you break down all the episodes in the season, you could tell where in the writer's room they're like, to hell with this. It was Friday afternoon. They're like, okay, fine, this one.
Yeah, well, what if Jadzia has an annoying protege?
There you go. Done. Brilliant.
Let's break for lunch.
Exactly, for 3 hours.
That's right. Yeah, I didn't think this was – a bad episode of Deep Space Nine. And this is before Deep Space Nine. I love Deep Space Nine. It's my favorite Star Trek. But I think that the first couple of seasons, it wasn't really clicking.
All of the Star Treks are like that, though.
It's true. Except for the original series. And once they get to the end of season two, this is when they introduce the Dominion and all that stuff. And they start doing arcs and it gets really complicated and rich. And none of that. And that's all the stuff that I love about Deep Space Nine, the complicated stories, the story arcs, the complicated character relationships. Mm-hmm. And none of that is really present here in this episode.
The need to one-up Babylon 5, damn it. Exactly. Arms race with Babylon 5 continues.
And it feels like this is like one of those generic Star Trek stories that could have been on any of the series. It doesn't really matter. You could swap out any character. Although I think the symbiote Trill thing is interesting. They don't really touch on it a lot. It's basically just like, you know, an arduous process that you have to go through, but they don't talk about, you know, what does it really mean to have an organism in you that has the dreams and thoughts of someone else?
Yeah, there's a little more to it than, you know, and old, well, and presumably Deep Space Nine as well, but just not here. They have gone into this kind of stuff, and and interestingly, and this is just kind of like, well, symbiote, whatever.
Let me tell you about my level 5 pilot certification again. tell me more of this.
How intriguing. What a charming fellow.
That's right. Did you know we have voles on the station?
I did not. Tell me more.
Yes. And this is another episode of Deep Space Nine where they make O'Brien do something embarrassing, or just basically make him do something that is inconsequential.
You must have gotten sick of that.
Chasing around voles, yeah. It's kind of annoying. I love O'Brien. He's another one of my... I love a lot of Deep Space Nine characters. I think the only character I really don't like on Deep Space Nine is Dr. Bashir.
I'm trying to think if there's anybody I don't like. Yeah, I don't really hate Bashir. I don't really hate anybody. They're just kind of there.
I don't hate Bashir, but he's not on my list. He would be on the bottom of my list if I were to rank Deep Space Nine characters.
True. Fair enough.
I think Jake would be... Well, the young Jake would
older Jake's better, yeah.
Yes,
just older like Jake older is Wesley good. Is better, too.
It's true. It's tough being a child actor, so I give him credit for that, but it doesn't mean I want to watch him.
No, very true.
Well, Warren, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. You'll always be my proto-universe.
Oh, sweet.
I don't even know what that means. Next on Random Trek, a hiatus until 2016. That's right. I'm taking the rest of the year off to recrystallize my dilithium crystals. But don't worry, Random Trek will be back better than ever. Well, probably honestly, just as good. In 2016.